Hey everyone, I'm Mirban Aranchat, and we're here at Tennis Summit 2018 to talk about modern tennis technique with Oscar Wegner. This is really fantastic to have Oscar on the summit this year. He was also on last year's Tennis Technique Summit, and it's just really great to have somebody with so much experience, both on the playing and coaching side like Oscar. And to tell you a little bit about Oscar, he is the founder of Modern Tennis Methodology, also known as MTM. And he's one of the most well-known tennis coaches in the world. After playing internationally in the 60s, Oscar undertook a coaching career and developed MTM, which really helps make tennis an easy sport to learn. And Oscar tours the globe giving clinics, lectures, seminars, and workshops on his revolutionary method as well. And he teaches publicly and privately throughout the U.S. And internationally. Oscar has also contributed to tennis publications and events, including USTA seminars, USPTA division conventions and world conferences, and USTA tennis teachers conferences. And in addition to tennisteacher.com, Oscar produces new DVDs and books and oversees his Modern Tennis College elite training program and Modern Tennis Methodology Coaches Association, which has hundreds of members. And Oscar has coached some of the best pros in the world, including Bjorn Borg and Vince Spadia. And he also played against top players like Rod Laver and Pancho Gonzalez. So, Oscar, it's really a pleasure to have you on this year's summit, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to see you, Mervin.
Yeah. Thank you. You too. You too, Oscar. And obviously, I'm really excited to have you on to learn about the key principles of modern tennis and how it can help our tennis game. So I just wanted to start out by asking you, Oscar, obviously we've shifted from the older methods of tennis to the newer ones. So how do you define modern tennis?
Well, modern tennis is a more powerful, simpler, instinctive way to play. Except that there's a lot of, misconceptions from the past that have been carried over. And so modern would be really modern, the way I coach in modern tennis methodology is a simplicity. It's so simple that it's hard for people to understand how it works. Basically, sports science in tennis has gone a little bit astray because they don't realize how the human being develops, like inside your mother, and then in which sequence, and then how the human being works. The human being is not just body and mind. It's a composite, body, mind, and spirit. And the spirit has been neglected in modern science, to pay more attention to the mind. So there are different factors that come into play that should be considered all the time, because that's you. No, it's not something invented. It's a human being, which is one of the most precious things, or the most precious things that exists in this universe, not just on planet Earth. So that is our starting point.
Excellent stuff. And you mentioned, and I did too in the intro, that MTM makes tennis easy to learn. So I was just wondering to dive a little deeper into that, and what specifically makes this method makes tennis easy to learn?
Okay, and that is where you allow the person to operate in the most natural and instinctive way. See, instinct is thought to be something intrinsic, but what happened, something that cannot be explained, but instinct is really the computations of the spirit. In the computations of the spirit, through the mind and through the body, our alignment, basically energy flows that have to be aligned. And when you interfere with those energy flows or you mix them, then there is a problem, because you stop the person. Instead of allowing the person, to express themselves, the people have so much talent, it's unbelievable. I get surprised every day coaching, but you have to show the simplicity. The spirit likes simplicity. you know, the mind likes complications. So basically, you have it who you have to address when you coach. And there's other things that come from evolution. You know, the human being in the billions of years of evolution, and let me tell you, it's not only in this planet, but it's in many other places too, he was developed, you know, with, you know, two sides. Okay, as we know, a person can be a right-hander or can be a left-hander, and that is really than one part of the mind is more dominant than the other. A few people are ambidextrous, you know, have more of a balance, but there's one side that is more dominant. So when you address a kinetic chain, okay, you should be working with one side of the brain, you know, and then align things there, and then, you know, for another stroke, you could go if a person has, say, a 200 backhand, you know, and it's a right-hander person, so then the right hand should be more dominant because you're working with the other side of the brain. And the difference is one side is power and strength and thought, you know, and the other side is more artistic or more, you know, ethereal, you could call it. And so some people, you know, really use the creative part, you know, this more spiritual part, you know, the less dominant part to create pictures, to create, you know, paintings, to create art of different forms. So this is something that sports science, for especially for tennis, should have very clear. It really sports science for everything. And unfortunately, you know, it's being misused, and then the person, there is confusion in the person because you go from one side to the other in the middle of one stroke. That happens with this, you know, formerly closed stance, which is now stepping to the ball. See, I teach totally open stance. And then so the right hand, okay, coordinates not only with the right arm, but also with the right foot, and you're playing, you're addressing the energy flows of one side, you know, of your brain. And then when you do the 200, like the Williams sister, the father learned, you know, a lot from my techniques and from the shows I used to do. Okay, so then they play open stance and they turn on that foot, on the left foot, you know, while, you know, in still in the present coaching that is being done, you know, people have to turn sideways for the backhand, step into the ball, and also for the forehand. Even though most people on the tour, you can see it from Agassi, you know, there's so many examples in YouTube, you know, Agassi and Federer, you know, these guys hitting, you know, off open stance, off the right foot, and the left foot floats out of the way and around it. So there is so much, so deep that we have to go. You know, I have some notes here, okay, that to ask the people that do sports science, you know, do you think evolution has to do something, you know, with the way the human operates? You can answer that. You think evolution, you know, has to do with it?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Billions of years. That's how we operate. And we have to respect that, not only respect it, but use it to our advantage. So that's one of the open stance is really the point where we collide, you know, with the conventional tennis or with the way modern tennis is being mixed with conventional.
Gotcha, Oscar. And with the open stance, oh, because that's a big part of your method as well. Like, I was thinking of, you know, let's say short balls and things like that. So in those instances, how would the footwork work? Like, would we still, we would run up to the ball and still hit an open stance, but have our weight shift forward? Or how is that how it would work?
Yeah, you run forward just like you run naturally. You're chasing, you know, a kid or you're chasing your dog, you know. you're not thinking of your feet. And then when you get to the ball, you don't need to stop in a certain position. You just use your hand and your arm independently. It's not that you have to think about it and involve the mind, okay? But, you know, it's something that it becomes natural. And when we, and I teach, and also, you know, Lucille Bochek, who is the, or Lucille Mosier also, who is the head of the, you know, Modern Tennis Methodology Coach Association, she's teaching a ton of kids, and they love it. Why? Because you just put them there facing you, and you show them how to operate with a hand, how to find the ball, you know, and how to finish. You know, you wait for the ball because the ball doesn't come as fast as people think. You know, the ball slows down a lot in there. Even, you know, it has been found at the professional, you know, level at the US Open that the ball from baseline to baseline loses 60% of the speed. And the ball from a serve that comes from higher loses 55% of the speed. So somebody hits you the ball 50 miles an hour. Okay, it gets to you at 20 miles an hour. Somebody hits a serve, you know, at 100 miles an hour, he gets there to your 45. And you play, you know, like Nadal or some other players behind the baseline, it comes to you, 100 miles an hour ball, it gets to you at 30 or 25 miles an hour. So you have to keep observing the ball in present time, you know, and then you'll see a slowdown, and then you find it, and you finish. Plus, there are more aspects to it, you know, but that's the basic thing, you know. Timing is waiting, is not rushing, although rushing is very a common, you know, habit of human beings, you know, the rush. Well, no, learn to wait. You know, and that happened to Isner in Miami, ended up winning it. He said, I'm not going to worry about the score. I'm not going to worry about anything. I'm just going to enjoy it and play every point. So what happened, the guy threw himself in present time. Now in the Davis Cup, he had more pressure, and the captain he was talking to, and so, you know, also, and so he felt more responsibility, and the guy was a little bit tighter, and he won, thank God, but it was, you know, a difficult match. It wasn't as easy as you have thought after winning Miami. You know, by Miami, he played spectacular. It wasn't easy also, the final, but he did phenomenal. And I'm so happy for American tennis, you know, that he and Querrey are playing really well, because those two guys, you know, are pretty modern, you know, and, you know, they are pretty natural. And you can see when you get into the zone, you play naturally. You don't worry about your feet or position. And it ended up paying off. A huge surprise to Americans, you know, ladies winning the ladies and the men in Miami in the last year that is Helen Keeley's game.
Yeah, really incredible results for us, for the U.S., and really happy about that, and great stuff. And so I just wanted to kind of apply the approach that you espouse as Oscar to, you know, a couple of different strokes, which will be fun. So, I mean, the first thing to cover, let's go with the forehand. What type of grips or range of grips would you kind of recommend on the forehand?
Okay. So I brought my racket here, and you tell me if you can see it on your screen. You know, yeah. The Western grip right now, can you see how my racket and my forearm are perpendicular? If you hit it like this, you're really, you know, putting the arm behind, you know. In semi-Western, it's pretty similar, you know, but the continental and then also the Eastern put the hand more in line with the forearm. So what happens is more stressful for this area. Instead, if you go like this, it's like playing with your hand, you know, the same for the backhand, one hand, you know, same thing, perpendicular. That's what I taught Quarten. Yeah, in the beginning you mentioned Quarten, but I worked with Guga on the 27th of February in Brazil this year, you know, in less than 2 months ago. So and Guga had the best backhand. I taught him from the time he was a kid, perpendicular, you know, like this. Look at my arm in the right perpendicular. So, you know, and people can even start with the thumb behind or the thumb down, you know, or start with the thumb behind to push. Like you put a stamp in an envelope and then switch it down. You know, a lot of the coaches don't like that. But anyway, if you go like this, more with a finger stay more continental on the backhand, then there's more stress on the arm. And that's one of the things that causes tennis elbow. Okay, and here on the forehand, you know, if you go more continental too, because the stress is right here, this part of the arm, and that's what tennis elbow is used for. Yeah, and for serves, okay, the tennis elbow is here for other reasons. But right now, we confine ourselves to the forehand. So I recommend, I put the racket on a kid this way. I said, put your index finger through here, you know, and then grab it. Okay, that immediately brings you a semi-Western or, you know, a Western, doesn't matter, you know, but you see the arm is behind the racket, okay? So that allows more control, more power, more ease, you know. It makes it so simple. You see, just don't hold the racket up because then your arm is tight, loosen up, you let it drop a little bit, you know, a little bit of separation here, doesn't matter. And that's how you play tennis, like you were playing with your hand. So that addresses the forehand in the one-handed backhand, right?
Exactly, yeah, that's perfect, Oscar. And also I was just curious, not to make you get your racket again, but like for the two-handed backhand, do you have a suggested kind of range of grips for that as well?
Absolutely. Same thing. Put your finger through here, grab the racket, then you end up, you know, on this hand with a semi-Western, Western. In you practice first with your left hand, so you let your non-dominant, if you're a right-hander, this part of the brain is like non-dominant. This will be the dominant part, right? And then you play with your left hand, and once you're with your left hand, and you're right, you know, activating your right brain, you know, your creative side, then you put the other hand down there in any way you like. I let the kids play. Sometimes their hand is like this, sometimes turn. It doesn't matter. Yeah, whatever the kids feel comfortable, because this is now the dominant hand, and it's going to dictate what this other hand does. And that's what happened with the Williams sister. You know, that they are so powerful and so incredible with the two-hander. They have open stance, they're facing the net, so they move to the ball. If they move to the side, you know, they, of course they turn, they run naturally, and then as they are hitting, they load on the outside foot, they hit, and then it's easy to go to the other side. So those are the fundamentals of MTM. It makes it so easy that you get people to rally within the first hour of instruction, which is amazing. You know, I done clinics like that in demonstrations that people could not believe how easy it was. Even with players that have already played and some have played the tour, you know, like Pam Austin, you know, the sister of Tracy Austin. We were in a clinic for the USTA in New York, and I showed, you know, to her how she could play, how she could serve with the left hand. And she was amazed. I said, I thought this hand was unusable. She couldn't do things with it. And she was playing beautifully and rallying with me in a few minutes with the left hand, you know, with the forehand, left hand, you know. And then, of course, in the other side, you already had a lot of experience with the right hand. But then serving with the left hand, she thought she couldn't do it. And I put a tennis bag as a target, and she was hitting the target. Not 100%, but she was doing phenomenal.
Wow, great stuff, Oscar. And I was curious, because obviously on the forehand, you know, open stance, but on the backhand, is there any utility to doing a close stance in certain, like, balls or positions, or is it pretty much kind of the open stance that you advocate for?
Okay, so here we come to the science of teaching. You have to practice something to get it better and better and better. I make them practice without the pressure, you know, with the open stance. Here in the forehand too, it's everything is open stance. Then, as you know, tennis is a game of emergencies. Everybody is running you around and all that. Then you do whatever you do in emergencies. It's like you're driving a car and a little kid crosses in front and you go around and then in the next corner you stop and you say, man, how did I do that? And you save the little kitten because, you know, it's instinct is far superior a computation than thinking. You know, instinct is at the velocity, you know, you're talking about the speed of light. Now, instinct is like thinking at a velocity that is really not known here on Earth except in theory. Yeah, instinct is a computation of the spirit, of the being. And that's why we have such perfect reactions, because human beings act better, you know, on instinct and in emergencies than they act, you know, when they think about it.
Yeah, that's very true, Oscar. And I was curious too, because obviously there's different footwork, I guess, patterns that you might use, like when you're going to the ball, you know, whether they hit it away from you, far away from you or close to you. And I was just wondering, you know, what type of footwork like we should be using on the balls as well, or even if we should be thinking about it much.
Good. So the fastest way of moving is leaning. And it's also when you're running, you have to change directions, it's the stopping and leaning side. So on the backhand, yes, it's good to stop with the outside foot and lean as you hit, so you're coming right back to where you want to go to cover the court. The same on the other side, on the forehand, you lean, you know, and then you stop on the right foot, and the left foot will float coming back. Okay, it allows you to turn, and it doesn't bring these forces, you know, this, you know, the turning forces into the hips, which is, see, and that's one of the problems of the closed stance. Now we're going to go deeper, you know, into the effects. When you put the foot forward, stepping forward on a closer stance, that foot gets a bit stuck into the ground. Some players can release it by jumping, but when you do it purposely in training, you are taxing your hips, your lower back, the sacroiliac, which gets out of place. And so I'm going to tell you something very serious, very, very serious. We are, with tennis, building a crowd, okay, of handicapped people, because the sacroiliac, when it gets taxed like that, eventually gets out of place. And you have seen it in a lot of people. They have one leg shortened than the other. Okay, that's because the sacroiliac gets out of place. And the ligaments, eventually when you do it a lot, the ligaments get stretched and the sacroiliac doesn't go back in place. Because normally it would go back in place. Or a chiropractor can help you also put it back in place. But if the ligaments are stretched, the tendency of the sacroiliac to stay out of place. And the sacroiliac has to do a lot with the, you know, with the hips, with the knees, but also with the whole genital area in people. So I did kind of a short survey, but my chiropractor had alerted me, a chiropractor I know in Indiana, I visit him sometimes, had alerted me. Women do not expand during birth, and it's truth. And also men get to be impotent when that happens. And this is something that is very serious. And the industry, the tennis industry, doesn't really know it. Even an early chiropractor for like 15 years, have missed that there was a space like 4 millimeters larger in my between or in my sacroiliac, which was not in the other side. So I'm talking now about health, and you don't want to teach a little kid and put him close down, stepping to the ball, and right there, you know, the kid is going to be thousands of balls there if he likes tennis, if he stays in tennis. That's why you see in the seniors, you know, you see a lot of bad backs, okay, a lot of bad knees, you know, and even bad hips, okay. So now that I touch a serious subject, we can get to the more fun again.
I mean, it's very serious, obviously. I'm glad you talked about that. And I was just curious, Oscar, you know, obviously you talked about, you know, in the footwork and kind of getting into the unit turn, but I just want to dig deeper into the unit turn and specifically, you know, what type of, well, first the unit turn, like how that works, and then also like what type of backswing you advocate between, you know, loop straight down and straight back, things like that.
Good. So once the kid learns to find the ball, you know, let me tell you the experience with Guga, because he became a good player, right? He was number one in the world. He won 3 French Open, so the guy must be good. So a little kid, he was, you know, at the time, 6, 7, 8 years old, with a bunch of kids from the academy. And the only thing that I did different was put a string over the net, so the kids learned to be tossing over the string, you know, and they don't aim too low, you know. So that was it. But then what happens is I had them, you know, going to the side, coming back in their own natural way. And I just want to answer your question precisely. Could you repeat exactly what you said?
Sure. So I guess the first question was, you know, I guess technically speaking, how do we initiate the unit turn, you know, how do we get our body, like what starts it? Is it the shoulder, the hips and stuff like that? And how do we do that? And then,
I got it exactly now, what you mean. Okay, so I teach the kids, touch the ball and lift it over the net and go like this, find the ball, lift it, you know, like this. And then I want them to teach them backswing. I want to teach them the unit turn. Okay, what do I say to them? Hit a little bit harder. Boom, there comes a unit. Boom, yeah, hit it, yeah. And then it comes also, I say, track it longer. Now, you know, when the ball is near, just boom, go for it. Okay, so they realize that modern tennis is not the speed of the racket that matters, it's the acceleration, because you know, power is mass times acceleration, not mass times velocity. And people are confused with that. They think they need a low velocity on the ball. And, you know, we measure Federer, for example. He has the little unit turn, as you say. You know, he's going here at about 7 miles an hour. You know, in back here, you know, he has a little whip, you know, in the back, but not too big. And then he gets to the ball and he does a big whip. You know, he finds the ball well in front because he likes to win in front. And he's going 17 miles an hour right there near the ball. And then he whips it. And in front of the left shoulder, the racket is going 75 miles an hour. So the ball is already gone. So, you know, he is doing with his body what the body wants to get power. Okay, when you teach that, you have to teach it on a gradient of difficulty. So to the kids that I'm just starting, I hit the ball, you know, 5 miles an hour, and they hit it maybe 10 miles an hour, you know, and then hit it harder, boom, hit it harder. And finally, I start hitting 40, 50, 60 miles an hour on the forehand, and then more, like a pro, you know. So this is something that is very, you know, delicate, because you cannot teach somebody power before control or velocity before control. If I was teaching you to drive now, okay, I wouldn't teach you 100 miles an hour, right? You go like 4 or 5 miles an hour, you know, and then you start testing that. Yeah. And I tested this. teaching 4-year-olds how to drive. For my life, you know, this girl from Brazil, then became, you know, a professional. You know, I was teaching her to drive, put her in my lap. Her sister was sitting in the other seat, you know. And then I said, okay, we go, and I go slow, you know, and she grabs the wheel. She couldn't reach the pedals, you know. I said, well, you know. And so she's testing it to the left, to the right. And then it was to the right too much, and it's in front of a light pole. Boom, I put the brake, you know. I said, what happened? Hey, she said, I move it too much that way, you know. Good. Okay, let's go back. If we reverse, get the car out, lined up again with the street, you know, and then let her try, you know, herself at a very slow speed. So when you're talking about the unit turn and all that, imagine making the unit turn, you know, and rock it back, and then you have to hit the ball 5 miles an hour. You wouldn't do too well. So this one of the barriers to study is too steep a gradient. You go too fast, too soon. You haven't had enough practice at a low speed until you're comfortable, and then you up the speed a little bit. So the unit turn and also the racket back. You know, racket back is probably one of the most damaging things in tennis because you get out of present time. No, in present time, you observe the ball. This is what I told Quartin. He was like 9 years old. And I say, wait longer for the ball, you know? And then he says, how long do I have to wait? I said, until you panic, then you blast it. And he got into the zone because we have the capability that we are taught in present time and just looking and not thinking, you know, we see things slower. We're a lot calmer. That's a big subject for another time, maybe, that we discussed. But, I mean, yeah, I help kids and adults to get into the zone. So this racket back, you know, prepare, you know, it's like you're going to go on a date. And I think I mentioned before, you get all prepared and all that. And you get there and you start talking. You never listen to the girl. say goodbye.
Oh, that's funny.
You have to listen. You have to observe. You have to listen what the person is saying. And I do that with all the little students because that's the way we teach it, in my opinion.
Right, right. Great stuff, Oscar. And I was just curious too, like what type of deficiencies do you see when you're teaching your students or when, you know, in the unit turn, like, you know, whether it's like wrist stuff or, you know, they're not using the right part of their body. And like, how do you help them correct that?
Good. I take them back to the back fence. I make them put the racket with the head down a little bit, you know, against the hand against the back fence. And I say, now turn it like a windshield wiper. Like this. Okay. And then I bring them back to the core and then do that movement. Because you feel a lot longer if you brush the ball this way than if you go straight into the ball. Just like, again, we go to the example with the girl, you know. Oh, no, you don't play tennis like this. You go like this. You have a lot more success, right?
Exactly.
I think I'm going, because that's feel. And feel is a computation, you know, of the spirit, of the being, of the person, you know, is body, you know, and mind combined. You know, body and mind and spirit all working together. That's feel.
Excellent stuff, Oscar. And I was curious too, on the one-handed backhand, like what is the role of the left hand if we're right-handed? Like what should we be thinking about for the non-dominant hand? Like what is that supposed to do?
You're supposed to open up like that until your shoulder blades touch. So that's the end of the swing. That's what Tommy Haas and Quirting and Wawrinka, they have such great backhand. They do it with the back. You know, they get the shoulder blades together, it's separate, you know, like this, you know, boom. So that prevents them from turning too soon because this way it's easier to to pinpoint where you want the ball. Federer does it too. His hand goes back. It's amazing. You know, that's what we should study. We should study the players that have more ease to play. Like Federer, you know, he moves, you know, that way, like Usain Bolt would move. He doesn't do this. They have turns of preparation, so thinking about his feet. He just sees the ball, follows his head, and just drags this outside foot, okay, which then becomes like the inside when the head ball, because it's right there, but it's really the outside foot. Gets there, hits, and he's coming back like a gazelle. And you can't believe the speed this guy is already, what, 37 or 38.
Yeah, what an incredible player. And so, obviously, you know, Oscar, you talked about this a little bit before, but I just want to nail down, in order to achieve, like, maximum power on our shots, if that's what we're going for, what should we think about? Like what should we do to get that power?
That's very interesting because, you know, in engineering, by the way, I apply engineering to things. I have 4 years of engineering and that's how I look at things. You have to see the very basics of force. You know, well, this is what happens. The easiest way for a human body to generate power is to change direction. So when you get to the ball, you pull. You don't go through the ball. You pull. And then the arm acts like a whip. You know, like a whip, you go, bah, like that, and then you hear the sound, bah, you know, you're going forward and you pull it. And what happens is the noise that you hear with a whip is a sonic boom. The tip of the whip has exceeded the speed of sound. It's like a sonic boom you hear in those operas, you go, boom, like, bah, you know, because it exceeded the speed of sound. So it's a sonic boom. So, and you do it yourself with a whip, bang, like this. So in tennis, you go to the ball and then you pull. You go to the ball in a way that you can pull, like you track the ball with your hand. You know, the ball is like coming to your hand and the racket is out there, but then you have to move it this way to get the racket head. So it's easy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's easy to generate power that way. In the volley, it's totally different. You stop, you know, at the volley. You know, I call it the half-inch volley or the one-inch volley. You stop, or you start, you stop. And what happens is all the muscles get connected. And in the volley, you're applying your body weight to the volley. And again, on the volley, if you lean first and let your foot slide, you know, and then you jump across, you can cover the sideline. Instead, if you jump across, if you cross your foot right there, you cover only half of the space, you know, of the distance. So this is why modern tennis methodology is kind of difficult to understand because it's so simple. And simplicity is what gets a player to get better and better and better, and you simplify every day. Actually, there was a coach from Hong Kong who was also a priest, and he was following the tour. He was talking to all the players, including Federer, of how did they learn to play so well when they were little kids? And they all said, well, we're looking for the simplest thing possible. But it didn't say it all in the same words, but they say we were like looking what caused what. And then the line between cause and effect, between your action and what you're seeing happen, has to be very simple, very straight. The more you complicate it, the more you think, you know, the more you mess it up.
Exactly, yeah. Obviously, we don't want to confuse the players and make it fun and enjoyable for them to improve their games, for sure. And Oscar, also wanted to ask you about the, you know, the contact point. Obviously, sometimes we'll hit it late or too far in front or things like that. So What's the ideal contact point for our, at least, well, let's say, because they might be different, let's say for the forehand, what is the ideal contact point?
Well, with the Western grip, excuse my racket again, it's obviously in front, you know, but there's something very peculiar about tennis. Okay, and the top pros use it. The contact point for the top pros is below the center, and that keeps, yeah, the torque keeps the racket close. If you hit the middle, well, it's kind of wobbly, you know, and then if you hit it above it, it kind of tends to open a racket and the ball flies. And what happens is you say, well, that is very difficult to achieve, you know, hit the balls here. Well, if you're focusing hitting the center, you know, and you hit most balls in the center, why don't you focus a little bit lower, you know? And then you start hitting more balls here, and they feel different. You know, it's like hitting in the middle of your palm or hitting with your fingers. So the fingers have a lot more feel than the middle of your palm. Same with a racket. You know, you go, you know, near the, closer to the edges, you get more feel. It helps you stay, keep the racket close, especially now that, you know, and not only that, kids then accelerate because the more they accelerate, the more toss spin they get, and the more the ball drops in the court. So they're very happy. They can hit all day, and the ball doesn't go out. Boom. Mm-hmm. They don't have precision, but who cares? The court is huge, you know, especially if they're little.
That is true. That is true. Great stuff. And then also just on the finish, and you did mention it, but I just wanted to go in sequence, I guess. So like what types of finishes can we have, you know, using MTM method and, you know, what's allowable in terms of like how high and low from the shoulder?
Okay. So you can see, you know, some players finish lower, you know, lower. You know, they go down like this, including Guga. I taught him like this, but then he started going like this and getting more tossing and all that and pulling more across like this, so feeling lower. Yeah, like Federer also does that. Then you have guys like Nadal that feel more overhead, you know, or, you know, more like this. So I only worry about that. You know, it's called, say, worry, not worry, but I only... With the little kids, I want a consistent finish so they relate the finish to the placement of the ball. Because if you start thinking of the impact, there's too many variations, too many fears also later. No, from the ball to the shoulder. Okay, later they can finish lower, they can finish higher, you know, you can finish in the same side sometimes, you know, it's instinctive. So you're teaching them a pattern that they can modify. So with kids, I go here because it's easy. I can say, kiss your hand, or kiss, you know, or touch your ear, you know, like this. I like it in front more because then you bend the arm more. And the power of the arm is in the biceps, you know, bending it, bending the arm. Going straight, this muscle is too short. And it ends up injury so many times for going straight arm. So you want to bend and finish this way. So that's kind of the simplicity of it.
Excellent, Oscar. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to share my screen. And just so we can see some of like the techniques in play, specifically with Kei Nishikori. I took a little bit of video of him practicing. So let's see if... just wanted to look at that, Oscar, and you know, try to see some of the principles, if you could kind of walk us through, you know, what he's doing. And I'll make it actually a little bit slower, so.
See, he's leaning, and the ball is going, and then he's was loading on the left, on the right foot, and then the front foot went a little bit forward, which actually is one of the things that people are coaching. Let's see if it happens again. Yeah, he jumped in, thinking that that way, you know, he will have more power. And there you see, he's being trained a little bit with a step in. Okay, so that would be my comment there. Unfortunately, you know, that puts a little bit more torque on the left foot when he lands. Look at it. He looks on the right, and then you didn't see the left foot. But let me see. Yeah, that tennis file for more. Can you close that little comment down there on the bottom?
Yeah, I can close that. Yeah.
Okay. Then now we look at it. Now we can look at it. Let's go one more. See that right there, the foot was a little bit stuck. Not enough maybe to cause problems, but if you do that in practice thousands of times the way, you know, a pro practices, it happened to me. It happened to me when I was actually was coached that way to step into the ball, you know, and go a little more linear, you know, when I was 16, 17. And it really caused me problems with sacroiliac.
Yeah, so I mean, it's good to see that because obviously not all the pros have like the same footwork and technique that aligns with MTM, but it's good to see what, you know, you would change with his. So you would just basically make his more of an open stance than the step in.
Well, I would let him, you know, and this is what would be weird in practice, let the left foot float. And as he turns, you know, land behind, you know, land more backwards than the right foot. So it would be an exaggerated open stance finish. But if you find where there is a comparison between Agassi, let me see, I think it was Federer. Let me just look. I hope it doesn't interfere with your...
Oh, no problem.
Does it interfere with your filming? Agassi, Andre Agassi and Carlos Moya in YouTube, they have a comparison and they put them side to side. Yeah, and it shows what the left foot is doing. And I said to him, hey, now you see why these two players were so good, because they were totally open stance. And so anyway, I can, after this conference, I can send you the, you know, the URL so you can look at that. Because it's so incredible, it's so easily seen. There's several instances where they're both hitting forehand, half a screen. And you can see how similar they were. You know, Carlos Moya, who is currently the coach for, you know, Nadal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, I'd be happy to share that URL and put it at the bottom of the video, Oscar. So it'll be there for you all to check out. And so just on the serve, just because it's such an important stroke, Oscar, I just wonder if you could just give us a few tips on how we can develop a better, more free-flowing serve.
Okay. Well, the first thing about the serve is that there is a slowdown in pause. When you toss the ball and then the racket is about to come forward, there is a slowdown where you're finding the ball more, because not every toss is the same. Your toss varies. Nobody can duplicate it exactly all the time. So you find the ball, and then it's mostly with the back of your hand, you could say the barrel racket, and then that pause allows you to find it, and then the barrel racket comes forward. It's like accelerating upwards like that, like you're hammering thing upwards and then coming across and a little bit backwards. You know who did that beautifully was Pete Sampras. So they should look at the slow motion. You can find them, maybe you can find some and put it at the end, because Pete Sampras didn't serve, the hand didn't go forward the way it went to the right and backwards, in order to create the whip also on the racket. And it's so easy to hit the ball hard you know, by going forward, even thinking that the hands goes a little bit past the ball and then you move it to the right and the racket will then accelerate like a whip and you finish backwards, you know, instead of going, you know, that you have to go forward. You know, a guy that found that, in one day that he was a little bit mad, he was practicing serve, he wasn't going well. You know, so he started trying different things and he tried not to take a back swing. He just lifted both hands and boom. And all of a sudden, he saw the ball going incredible speed. And the guy, you know, his name was Andy Roddick. And then he kept that. Remember, he didn't have this all around. Like he went straight up and boom, like that. He had found what to do with the hand, you know, so well that he had the fastest game of his time at one point.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's incredible. Obviously, his serves were just devastating. And so, yeah, that's it's great to know that advice. I appreciate that. And also, I'm just curious, Oscar, if there's any sort of special tools or equipment or anything that you might use to train your players in the MTM method. I'd like to definitely hear about that.
Yeah, there are, you know, there's this, you know, ball that you can practice with, you know, it goes back and forth, you know, the eye coach, okay, and there's other, you know, the things like, but I make them, people go outside of the court, like 30 feet out from the back, and hit the ball over the fence. Then they learn to hit upwards and spin a ball, and that helps tremendously. Yeah. And regarding the injuries in tennis, yeah, you can go to tennisteacher.com and you sign up. There's a free book there, but behind there is videos about injuries for tennis, you know. And the chiropractor that I mentioned is there explaining, you know, what the problem is, you know, with the rotations and the hips, you know, and the knees. And so, and then we are comparing players also in the video that we're doing together. Also, I think there's three videos there with him that are very, very explanatory. So people realize why they should play tennis, like when they're shopping, you know, you're going this way, unless, you know, you see something you want very much, you know, and then you go sideways, you know, when inspecting this stuff. But, you know, yeah, into the kids, in the iron force that into the kids is walking and running. And you're right, you got a short ball, you go forward, but you shouldn't even stop at it. You get your hand a little bit independent, you just do what you want, you know, and then you stop. Because if you're trained to stop and position yourself, sometimes the ball may move in different ways and you're not what you want. Then you just keep running and hitting as you run, or sliding if you're on clay, or even on hard, you can slide, you know, if it's very difficult, you know, but it doesn't have to be necessarily, you know, close stance for left foot in front. I seen Federer slide, you know, with the right foot, you know, and hitting an incredible cross court, you know, on a short ball. And yeah, and more players, and Federer more times also. So I would recommend study the pros, the top pros, you know, and, you know, use your own wits, you know, to decide what is for you easier, simpler, you know, more effective.
Great stuff. And along those lines, Oscar, I wanted to ask you too, you know, obviously the method MTM is about studying the pros and what they do, but are there any things that the pros may be doing that we should be careful about and maybe not copy or just be wary of?
Yeah, that's where you see the influence, you know, coaches coaching a mix of modern and conventional tennis. And so you have to, it's so difficult to distinguish from that. So I would study, you know, the free book about modern tennis, you know, that I have a tennis teacher recommend. So they will study that and then see what the players do in alignment, what I say, you know, what times they do it and what times they do it differently. But right now there are great examples in the internet. But for example, Andre Agassi, we just talked about in that video. On the backhand, Andre turned sideways, but Andre hits through the ball more, straight through the ball in the backhand than in the forehand, except when he wanted to hit that short cross court. You know, he would pull more to the right, you know, and he had a great and incredible short cross court, but it was more like the right hand was still dominant, but at some point he had to apply the left hand, you know, in order to turn it, to turn the racket. So one hand really works against the other in order to turn the racket. This hand is pushing down, the other hand is pulling up. So there's a lot of, you know, research to be done regarding the pros, because sometimes you have a favorite player that has a great forehand and the backhand kind of stinks, and then the other one has, you know, both strokes good, or then the other one has the other stroke good. So, I would recommend to search between the top players, because obviously they have the more efficient game because they achieve better results.
Great stuff, Oscar. And obviously we'll definitely link to tennisteacher.com below the video, and with the great resources you have. And also want to ask you about, I mean, I know you've talked about some instructions that aren't optimal, but what is one myth about tennis technique that you'd like to bring up and kind of dispel for us?
Yeah, the stepping to the ball is causing a lot of injuries, you know, in also problems in developing a body. So tennis kids should be taught from the beginning open stance, and then let them adjust the way they want for every shot, you know, instinctively. That's the one of the things I like to correct. Yeah, and if I can mention a second one,
yeah,
it's not rushing. Yeah, human beings are their best when they stay calm, when they, you know, when they are more serene. So let's promote that.
Yeah, serene like Serena. But yeah, no, that's true. Especially, I mean, rushing in all facets is just terrible, and you can even get to accidents and things like that with that rushing. So Oscar, I obviously wanted to ask you about MTM, you know, how we can learn more and what types of things you're doing with MTM.
Well, I have the MTMCA, which is the Coach Association. Now, there's a lot of data there, but MTM, the best thing to do is to look at the basics. What? Because those basics apply not only to the beginner, to the intermediate, advanced, to the pros as well. And they are using them. And that's how, I didn't invent anything. I just observed. And then when I played Pancho Gonzalez, I knew, you know, he had a fabulous serve, you know, and I knew his forehand was a little bit stiff and with the racket up a little bit like that. So I served to his forehand. And so Roy Emerson, who is a friend of mine, and I practiced with him a lot, asked me one time that I was practicing with Gonzalez, he said, why you serve to his forehand? I said, because he's a little bit stiff, he always returns down the line. He comes to my backhand, which is my favorite shot, you know. And so he played him, and it was at that time at a tour that was playing for $10,000, and the winner would continue to the next week, and the winner so on. And so Emerson played Gonzalez, best of five sets, you know, for $10,000. And what happens is he became 6-3, 6-2, 6-3, I think was the score. He served everything to his forehand. It was funny because he was watching me before they arrived early to the place where the exhibition was. Gonzalez didn't want to practice with Emerson, neither Emerson with Gonzalez. And Emerson was sitting at the side of the court with Madeleine, who was the wife of Gonzalez, and just watching a little bit, you know. laughing, you know, and laughing at me because I was getting a headache because Gonzalez had me running so much, you know. Anyway, but it was interesting that observation, you know, paid off for him in the match that he had with Gonzalez.
Wonderful stuff, Oscar. And what types of, you know, courses and videos and things like that and resources do you have at tennisteacher.com that we can check out?
Well, I have basics, I have advanced stuff, I have footwork. But when you say you see footwork, you're going to laugh because we are going to see all these things we're talking about, natural footwork. You know, instinct is an instinct, how to cover the court quickly and all that. But also about the strokes, how to play natural. So I cover everything. I would say the best thing is, look, one at a time, watch it a few times if somebody doesn't agree or looks at something and compare it with the guys on the tour, especially the modern guys. And the young guys now, they are playing that way, you know. You can see in Zverev, you know, how they are using this thing. And a lot of the guys are appearing now on the tour and having incredible results, young guys. So you, and then this way you can copy, you know. And Del Potro, who all of a sudden, yeah, came back and is not hurting, and he is a very calm guy. You know, or he knows how to wait for the ball. Yeah. That's the whole area, South America, Latin America, influence doing ESPN from 1994 to 2000. I was a commentator, and I used to do this that we're talking now a little bit, not too much. I couldn't do it. Also, I had tennis tips in Spanish, and I was commentating Spanish for Latin America. 6 years, and I would do this during the matches and commentating. And so the kids in that area, you know, they were very strong influence those years, you know. But yeah, so now are the older players because I'm not on ESPN anymore, you know, I retired from that.
Well, I mean, you're teaching a lot of players how to you know, play better tennis, and that's the main thing overall. And great stuff, Oscar. And so I was curious too, you know, what the best way is for the audience to connect with you, you know, whether online, if you have social profiles, or in person or anything like that.
Yes, I have in Wikipedia, I have a page, and also online, you know, I have a blog, it's called Modern Tennis, you know, and so, and then the things, when you go to tennisteacher.com, you can get the book for free, and you can get a lot of other videos for free also. And then I have another website that I haven't promoted very much, but it's called tennisiseasy.com. Tennisiseasy.com. And I have more data there, and also I have simple videos that are amazing, you know, because people, if they get the basics right, you know, people have so much talent, dormant talent and potential, that if you don't stop them, they get better and better. But the stops are the false data. That's the only stops, you know. You get false data and you do something that isn't really making tennis more complicated. In tennis, it's one of the simplest sports to learn and to play. And people say, Oscar is crazy, you know. No, try it. That's why we have MTM, Modern Tennis Methodology. And then we have the Coaches Association, which has about close to now 600 coaches. They're teaching that all over the world, you know. And you see it, you know. I don't want to brag about it, but my first book was in Russia, it was in Serbia, you know. These kids that you saw come out very good, the coaches there wrote to me, you know. In Russia was Bud Collins, the commentator, you know, who was there and came back and said, Oscar, you wrote a book. I said, how do you know? Oh, he says the Russian coaches loved it. Okay, and you saw an instance where this lady had this academy, indoor academy in Moscow, and it's an older lady, and she loved my book, and so she started teaching all these girls. She had like 45 girls, you know, teaching them mostly indoors because the weather is pretty rough over there, and then some outdoor courts also. And that was 1990, 91, 92. In 2003, these little girls were now ladies, okay? And you saw from that academy, four in the top 10. And there was a fifth one, Mesquina, who was not from that academy. The Kuznetsova, the other girls, you know, were two in the final of the US Open. In the top 10 in the world. Can you imagine that? Mesquina also played model. I don't know where she got it, but she was not in that academy. But from that academy, from those 45 girls, you get four girls in the top 10. It's amazing. It's just crazy. You know, there was a lady that died, unfortunately, was the manager of the US Open site in Flushing Meadows. And she said to me, now I can see, I could never realize why Spain has so many good players, you know? Yeah, and that was before. That occurred before because I worked there one summer helping, you know, and with the techniques. So there's a lot to look at because the information is there and the pros are playing that way. But you have to be, you know who was very smart? Richard Williams. He saw the shows I do, he taped them, and he went against the other coach who was coaching his girls at the time. They were 9 and 11. You know, Serena was 9, Venus was 11. And he said, no, for now on it's open stance. And as soon as he got 6 million from Reebok, eventually he got 6 million more, so he got 12 million. $6 million from Reebok, he bought his own house. He started coaching the girls, you know, himself, and then also was getting players and coaches to play with the girls. But he did the instruction. And he said it to me, Oscar, it makes so much sense, you know, I had to teach the girls that way. But he said, it makes so much sense that I start showing the videos to the girls, you know, and look where they got. Number yeah. one in the world both, and number two also, this, and number one and two at the same time. He gave me a big hug, Richard, when he met me. He said, Oscar, you're a good guy.
Wow, that's so wonderful just to see how far-reaching your teachings have gone all around the world and then with the greatest players of all time. And just really cool, Oscar. And before I let you go, I've obviously had a great discussion today about modern tennis methodology. I just want to ask you one key actionable tip that you can give our audience that will help them improve their tennis games.
The key would be wait for the ball. She was coaching Bjorn Borg for his second comeback. And I said to him, Bjorn, you're rushing. I said, after a few days, you know? I said, the more you wait, the more time you will have. And the guy looks at me and he says, that's not logical. I said, good. He was 34 and going on 35 now. I said, I understand. I said, you remember your Wimbledon final in 1980 with John McEnroe with a long tiebreaker. And the guy said, yes, I remember it. I said, do you see the ball slow or fast? And I saw him like looking up, he's thinking and looking at it. And then he said, I saw the ball slow. I said, well, were you waiting? Were you stalking the ball? He said, well, I was tracking the ball very long. I like the word tracking. And I saw his pupils dilate. I knew I had him in the zone then. And he said, I see what you mean. Because that happens in the zone. The pupils open up when you're tall in present time, you know, and looking. And then I see what you mean. And he said, good. I didn't say one word more. So he started playing better and better, starting being the juniors he was losing to, then Jimmy Arias, who had been number 5 in the world, he started beating two, and they arranged a practice with Pete Sampras indoors. And Bjorn lost 7-5, 7-6 with two set points in the second set tiebreaker. Then he shook hands with Sampras after that. They thanked each other. He came over to the second court where I was in the corner, giving him space. you know, and he was floating. And I look at his eyes. He had blue eyes. I couldn't see the blue. You know what he said to me? You couldn't see the blue because his pupils were so dilated. It was all black. He said, Oscar, I have so much time now. So that would be the best thing, you know, just take your time, track the ball, focus on the ball. Don't think. Don't panic. Don't get nervous. Because that's what nervousness is, thinking too many things. And that's why the mind starts going out of control. Yeah.
Wow. Well, great stuff, Oscar. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I just want to thank you so much for coming on to Tennis Summit 2018 and educating the audience about, you know, the modern tennis methodology and how we can improve our tennis games. And thanks for all the work that you're doing for so many tennis players, like I said, worldwide and in the U.S. as well. So I really appreciate it, Oscar. Thanks for your time. Oh, go ahead.
I want to thank you because you brought up a lot of stuff that some are from the past, you know, but that that's what makes it worth living and playing tennis and coaching it. Thank you very much, Mervan.
Thank you, Oscar. I really do appreciate it. And yeah, all the best to you. And I'm sure we'll connect again soon. And have a great day.
You too.